Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. How are you doing, Sherry?
Pretty good, Jason. You know, it's been very, very busy in my neck of the woods. How about you?
Busy as always. But oh. I don't have my finger on the pulse of the paranormal, so I have no idea what's going on out there. How about you?
I know. I know you've been working, and, you know, both of us have been so busy. It's been crazy. It's a good
kind of
crazy.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Well, just been, doing some shows, doing a lot of readings, and, you know, it just, if it's not one thing, it's another, to be honest with you. So between my Chinese medicine and psychic and or mediumship and just teaching yoga a few times, it's keeping me on my toes. And also, too, you know, as a practitioner, you know, I'm always trying to educate myself and being better at what I do. So, yeah, that's what it's all about. You know, it's kind of like honing into your skills, so. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. And today I got a run in and I feel good. So that's pretty much about it.
And you were a guest on a show a week or two ago, weren't you? Talking about Chinese medicine.
In fact, I was on a show just last Tuesday, this past Tuesday, Into the Fire. Baron Maria, their show, we talked about from Chinese medicine to psychic and mediumship and just a little bit about my paranormal experiences and also with the just a kind of hit the edge of the surface about me being a witness to an exorcism and a house that was attacked by demons. So yeah, and I'm going to be on another show. It's going to be on. It's been solidified today. It's going to be on Paranormal Night Stalker, and so I'm going to be on there. Not this coming Thursday, but I think I think believe it's Wednesday. It's going to be at 8:00. I'll post it on Facebook and my personal page. So. Yeah, we're going to talk about either Chinese medicine and or my psychic mediumship.
Very cool. So you got us a great guest tonight. We're going to talk about, from what I understand, we were talking a little bit before the show, toxic people and toxic environments. Is that right?
Right. And this gal's new. She's been around with Reiki and energy healing and different modalities. I was able to witness some of her work and what she does. And, I was very fascinated in the knowledge. And that's the biggest thing is I was very intrigued and very fascinated with the knowledge that she has to share with us. And a lot of things we all know, but it's just having somebody to say, you know, what do we do? What kind of tools do we need with toxic environment and toxic people, either personal or professional life? So we're just going to get right into it. And, I talked to her, and she's just amazing. A lot of wealth of information. And like I said, take what you need and leave the rest. But this gal is on top of it, and I'm just glad to have her on the show for the first time. So bring her on.
All right.
Hello.
Hi, Nicole.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Thanks for having me and all the nice words.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And I want to introduce my other half, Jason. So we're going to go in, and I was very intrigued with your work, and you have, like I said earlier, you have so much knowledge and how to help people and, you know, just tell people what can they do, what the tools that they can have so that they can, help themselves and protect themselves.
Sure thing. So one of the things that a lot of people get in their lives is that they may have toxic people in their lives. You know, they'll have a coworker or a person who is in their family, unfortunately, or something along those lines. And what will end up happening more often than not, is that these people are often kind of energy vampires. They'll plug into you, and you'll hang out with them maybe at the job or what have you, and at the end of the day, you feel like you've just been dragged through the mud. You're just exhausted, and that's because you've been courted. And the way that a person will typically do that is that they'll say something a little tiny bit incendiary. Maybe they'll critique you or you should be doing this rather than that or whatever, and try to get an emotional response from you. And then once you have that emotional response, they'll just plug right in. So you're going to want to, in those types of situations, there's different types of shielding that you can do in your environment to kind of prepare yourself. Because, you know, I used to work with a person who would routinely do this all the time. And you just had to get to the place before you went into your place of business and say, you know what, I'm not accepting any courts today. I'm not accepting any kind of energy exchange beyond I'm working for money and that's it. You know, that's all I'm going to do. And then when you encounter those people, you can create for yourself a shield and visualize a floor-to-ceiling mirror. So then anything they kind of spew at you, it just bounces right back, and you don't end up absorbing it. They don't have any ability to court you, and you don't have to, like, deal with their stuff. And they start to actually change their behavior. Usually it just turns into they don't harass you so much anymore. They'll go on to somebody else who's a little bit more available. But for the most part, it's a really easy way to kind of protect your own space, protect your own energy. If you do
find
yourself.
Isn't that sad, though, Nicole? Those kind of people, they're always looking for new victims.
Yeah, but you know what? There's only so much we can do, because even if you were to tell them, you know, please stop courting me, they would just look at you like a crazy person, you know, and then it turns into like, oh, she's just hypersensitive or whatever. So you just have to protect yourself. That's all. They may change,
and,
they may
not change.
And, you know,
do you find not only you feel drained, but sometimes, depending on if you're aware of your body, I feel it in my gut. You know, that's how I feel, like something's just not right, like my stomach is turning. How about you, Jason?
Well, I've had the experience of spending about 18 years catching shoplifters, so I had to deal with negative people for a very, very long time. I know I think it affected me over the years. It affected my psyche and my outlook on life and stuff like that. So I've kind of been tainted by the negativity. But when I have to, you know, throughout life, I've encountered negative people, and I just kind of try and kill it with kindness. I find that if somebody's being negative or standoffish and you're just super friendly, it makes it hard for them to be negative and standoffish. It might not work all the time, but I find improved interactions, you know, when I'm making an extra effort to be nice and communicate and stuff like that.
That's a good strategy. Some people have a black belt in sucking on you, so you can be nice to them, and they'll almost take that as an invitation. But I think that's a great strategy overall. But we're talking about people who just are just – they're born to be parasites almost. You know, they just really don't know another way to be, because they've never really been taught to ground, or they've never been taught to run their own energy. And for the most part, this program has been working for them, so there's really no interest for them to change, unfortunately. The other thing that you can do, too, is a lot of times, like Sherry said, you'll notice the energy in your belly, but sometimes you'll get somebody who's really clever, and they'll cord you through your feet, and they'll also cord you in your back. So if you just kind of go with the basic, oh, well, you know, I cut the cords in my belly, and I'm still really tired, I must not be corded. It's like, no, run like a hoop of light through your whole body, down to your feet, over your head, and just intend that everything be severed so that you can just be in your own energy.
Do these people become parasitic? Do you think it has something to do with just, I assume it would be the way they're raised, some sort of, I don't know, is there any consistency?
I think that sometimes the person will have a family relationship where everybody in their family just kind of sucks on each other. So it's kind of like how they were raised, of just kind of like find your own battery pack, because everybody's going to be sucking on each other and we don't know any other way to be. So there's going to be that one. And a lot of times people will just really feel kind of needy. You know, they just really want that extra energy boost. So it's hard to say, but I would imagine that for the most part, you're looking at somebody who it's been a successful strategy, you know? We would have this person where I was working, and you could tell when everybody had been cutting their cords, she would get a little frantic and just be kind of cruising around looking to plug into somebody else. And you could talk to her about energy tools, and she just really wasn't listening. It was not in her consciousness.
You know, Nicole, I really feel that it happens more often than most people are aware of, whether it's a conscious or unconscious level. And like you said, it could be either family members, it could be coworkers, it could be the person down the street or inside the school or inside the shopping center.
Yes, really, all over the place. It's just like, and you you just really kind of need to be aware that typically the way that's going to work is there's going to be some sort of an emotional interaction. Some sort of emotion where you kind of open yourself up and they plug in. And the big thing to remember here is it's not like these people are horrible and they're, you know, going against your will. You allowed this into your field. So there's an aspect of you that's not protecting yourself. So it's really up to the individual to be cognizant of what's happening to your own energy field, how you're going to ground, how you're going to shield, what you will and won't allow in your own space.
So can I ask you in a circumstance and how to deal with somebody like this? If a person comes to you and they're always whining and complaining, they have health problems or they have problems in their life or they're, you know, they're traumatized or, you know, poor me, I'm broke all the time. So even if you send love and everything else and every time you have interactions, how would you suggest for an average person to deal with something like this?
Well, first of all, see it. You know, that's the first step of, like, realize this person has a black belt in codependency, and they're just really, you know, desperate to figure out a way to kind of suck on you because they feel in some way that they need this. So my first step's going to be, because, again, most of the time that person, you can interface with them and say, have you noticed that your word patterns are kind of self-defeating and or focusing on limitation? Have you noticed that the way that you're interacting with your intention in the universe is really kind of not the way you want it to go? If you're really looking for prosperity and health, saying words like I'm always feeling bad or I never have money isn't really helping you. So you might want to look at that. And if they're open to hearing with that, that's going to be a nice first step because it's not on the place of you're doing it wrong. It's just like, hey, have you thought about this type of situation? Have you thought about in the fact that, you know, as the universe is set up to always make you right, if you're intending that this always and that never happens, you're kind of invoking that for yourself. Those your words are an invocation. But some people, it takes them, like, who knows how many times hearing that from a variety of different sources before they actually start to hear it. And some people really get a lot of mileage out of that victim T-shirt.
Wow.
How do people become more in tune with their energy? I imagine a lot of people out there, maybe even the majority, aren't in tune or even give a second thought to their own personal energy. How would somebody go about becoming more in touch with that?
Well, I think the first step is definitely going to be realizing that you are an energy being, that there are things that you can do that are going to be beneficial or not, like going outside, like being in the sunshine, like taking exercise, eating good food, turning off the TV set, hanging out with positive people, thinking positive thoughts, and taking a path that's not in that same old rut of what you've always done that creates the same old thing that you've done beforehand. For what I found for me is I would introduce people to flower essences, was usually the easiest way for people to get started. Flower essences are really powerful and gentle, and they allowed people to kind of feel that their energy can shift. I would show them how to ground. You know, this is how you're going to want to think about doing this. But the first step is they have to actually be open to it. You know, they have to get to the place where they want to be personally responsible for their stuff. And as we all know, there's people who are totally on that page and there's people really not. And there's nothing you can do about that until they're ready.
Right, exactly. And we talked about that earlier, Nicole, that you, a lot of times, whether in your profession or in my profession, people are seeking answers outside themselves, but they're not willing to do the work. The internal work to change the dynamics of their thinking and the outcome.
Exactly. They really get a little bit more mileage out of being a victim, that this is just sort of randomly happening to them. And truly, I'm not meaning to discount in any way the situation that a lot of people have had, very traumatic situations in their lives or really horrific upbringings or traumatic events or what have you. I'm not discounting that at all. And I'm not in any way saying that, you know, they created this for themselves or whatever. But there's an aspect where you can choose to react. You always get to choose your response, okay? Nobody can make you mad or happy or sad or angry or anything. You're choosing the way you're going to respond to the events in your life at every time of the day. So if you're choosing always to react with anger or sadness or what have you, that is always going to be your choice, because the same thing can happen to three different people and they can all have different reactions and it's still the same event.
My
so
feeling
the first
is...
No, that's fine.
My feeling is that you're always one decision away from a totally different life. And so
yes.
If you look at it from, you know, from an internal perspective, what are my choices? How are the outcomes? What is the process? It really is.
Yes.
That's how I feel anyway.
And what's really good to do is if you have an opportunity to kind of think about if something happens, or just an easy example is, like, let's say you just decide you're just going to reach out to the universe, you know, extend your hand out. Now, do you extend your hand out in a place of fear? Do you extend your hand out in a place of joy, anger? What's the emotion there? So that's going to be a nice kind of indication of, like, what's up for you? What's your default response? Because a lot of people's default response is anger. No matter what happens, the first thing they do is get ticked off about it. So pay attention to what your first response is whenever something happens. And try to shoot for just kind of neutral amusement if you can.
I think anger is sometimes hard to control. Do you think there's an epidemic of negative people out there? It seems like we're constantly bombarded with the news and everything, and it seems to be predominantly negative, you know, the wars or this or that. And I wonder, that has to have effect on people's psyche and outlook and behavior, I would think.
I think that anger is the armor that we put over our fear, that the people who are the most angry are really afraid and are in pain, and they don't really know how to expose themselves to opening up to potentially additional pain. So the easiest way, you know, if you're going to have somebody that might be poking at you with a sharp stick, if you kind of flame them first, they'll back off. So I think that's a lot of people's response, is just that they're so overwhelmed with fear about scarcity, about not being enough, about not having enough, being pushed out of the comfort zone, about other people potentially harming them, that they kind of cover that up with the anger of just kind of back off and leave me alone. I'm going to hold on to my self-righteousness, and it also lets them run their energy, because a lot of people aren't even in their bodies. You know, they're not in their bodies 100%. They're not grounded. And so when they run their anger, it kind of gives them a little juice. You know, they feel kind of invigorated and the energy starts moving around. So it's kind of a weird setup. Again, we don't really have a whole lot of examples in our culture of people who are not drama queens. You know, you never see them on TV. Who's going to want to watch a television show where people are just relating calmly and just kind of communicating their point of view and not going to the drama place? So very few people have seen what a you know, intelligent, well-thought communication would look like. How do you model a different way of being if you've never seen it before?
That makes sense.
Right. What do you think? Makes sense to me. Do you run into a lot of, well, Sherry, I imagine you run into a lot of negative things. Is that true? How do you deal with
it? Well, you know, I would say negative. It can be. A lot of people are trying to find some answers, and sometimes it's difficult for them to be impartial and not biased into their own thinking. So, you know, sometimes they might need some guidance, you know, some direction or some suggestions. But I'm finding that when it comes to illness, a lot of times it is basically mentally rooted from mental, emotional, spiritual.
Yes.
It really is. And as a psychic, you know, being able to pinpoint what's going on with the body, and everything is all, you know, integrated. We're all connected, and somehow our bodies are connected, and being able to help facilitate some comfort so that their bodies are able to heal themselves. And that's the whole thing. When it comes to mourning or direction, I don't know. I wouldn't say negative. I wouldn't even say that. It's just they need some kind of guidance. I don't think it's negative. I think we all, in one point or another, need some guidance, and sometimes, you know, seems somebody just to listen to us or help us. So,
yeah, I think people get stuck in their rut, and I also think that, you know, we've been kind of acculturated to looking out, like you were saying, looking out outside of ourselves for the solution to our issues. And when we do look outside ourselves, we seem to go into this pattern of just kind of handing our power over to somebody else. It's like, here, I'm broken. Please fix me. I don't want to have to deal with this. And the key part with this whole program is we're in bodies because we're here to do our work. And that means you have to actually show up, participate, and do things in order for things to happen. You know, room service is not going to deliver you your life by you sitting on the couch waiting for it to show up. You have to actually participate. You have to do the work and show up and, you know, walk your path and do all those different types of things. And that's how we learn and grow. It'd be cool if you didn't have to do that, but that's not this school. We didn't get that one.
Not in this lifetime, right?
No, not here. No. You have to actually show up, do the work, and make it happen rather than waiting for the room service person.
You mean I have to work for the things I want?
You were talking about flower essences.
I know.
And I asked the question. It was very intriguing and very educational. There is a difference between flower essences and essential oil essences. And would you please tell our listeners what the difference is?
Yes. An essential oil is going to be an oil that has a fragrance to it. So it's going to be a distillation of a fragrant plant material like sandalwood or lavender or lemon or what have you. And that when you finish the distillation process, you'll have a concentrated oil that is highly fragrant that you can use in a variety of different applications. But it's specific, and aromatherapy will also have mental and emotional associations and physical assistance and all those different types of things if you're working with an aromatherapy practitioner, but it really is primarily about the aroma of the plant. A flower essence is a vibrational remedy, and if you're familiar at all with homeopathics, it's going to be kind of in the same category in that way. Homeopathics, as the example, is something that is based on assisting the body to come back into balance by introducing highly diluted substances that would have created the imbalance in the first place. So, for example, if you had allergies where you had streaming eyes and streaming nose, you would use homeopathic onion. Okay? So you're using something that has like the ability to create an imbalance to assist your body to get back into the program. A flower essence is the angelic frequency of a flower. You can also make a vibrational remedy with a stone, like a crystal. You can make it with a place. You can make it with music. You can make it with prayers. You can do anything that charges a frequency into the water. And what you do with those is that because they hold a really high frequency, you can integrate those into your field or into your physical body. And they seem to vibrate out the lower frequency, anger, mad, sad, bad types of stuff. So it's working with that angelic frequency in your space. So completely different than a flower than an essential oil.
What's a good way to get started to learn more information about maybe if somebody was interested in the flower essences, where would it be a good place to start? Or
you know, a pretty easily available flower essence is Bach's Rescue Remedy. And Edward Bach, in fact, his name's actually pronounced Batch, but I'm going to just slaughter it because he's gone anyway. But Edward Bach was one of the first practitioners with flower essences, and he created an entire line of flower essences that are pretty easily available. And so a lot of times you can find these in drugstores and health food stores, a Bach's Rescue Remedy. And it's a combination of five different remedies that's really great for stress or fear. I got introduced to them a million years ago when I was going through a really rough time and I felt like somebody had been rubbing me down with broken glass. And so I could take drops of Rescue Remedy anytime I felt wobbly. And what's great about flower essences is they're non-narcotic. There's no side effects. You can't overdose on them. So if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, life is just a little too wobbly for me right now, and you take a couple drops every 20 minutes, you're not going to turn into a space bunny. You're not going to be incapable of driving. You can just continue on with your day, but it's going to kind of just calm and center and smooth the edges down. So that's a really nice way to be introduced because it's a fairly available product. It's about, depending on the size of the container, maybe $12, $15, something like that. You can use them multiple times. They even have formulas for children. You can use them on pets. You can drip it on an animal's head. You can drip it on your child's head if they're, you know, being a little crazy. So you can very easily find that particular flower essence combination in a lot of different places, and you can definitely find them online.
Are they infused with Reiki or anything like that?
The way that you would make a flower essence is that you charge the water with the plant material. You could do that either by setting it on top of the water, and you're going to want to do it in a crystal bowl with distilled water or spring water. And you'll want to have it so that it kind of allows time for the essence to be integrated into the water. And then you take, that's called the mother tincture. You can take that water and put it into a container, and then you succuss it, tap it on your other palm like 100 times, and that charges it to make it into a remedy. So that's how you make a flower essence.
Wow.
So the plant's not actually touching the water? I'm trying to visualize.
You can do it either way. You can do it either way. So the classic way is that you would take the flower and put it in the water, but it doesn't seem to make that much difference. You can put it kind of flower adjacent. And that's kind of a nice way to go, because sometimes you might have a plant that may be endangered, you know, that's a protected plant, and you really don't want to be snapping orchid heads off and putting it in water solution. So there's ways of getting that same type of frequency with the plant, with adjacent to the plant.
I know it seems like mental illness, depression, and anxiety is rampant, and it seems like anytime anybody goes to the doctor, if they're feeling down or anxious, they want to prescribe, you know, these SSRIs and stuff like that. So it kind of sounds like these flower essences would be good, you know, if
yes.
maybe might be helpful versus having to go and give Big Pharma a bunch of money for all these things that alter brain chemistry.
Exactly. In fact, when Edward Bosch first designed his flower essence, he was a medical doctor, and then he found that his clients weren't getting better, so he decided to pursue homeopathy, and he actually developed some things called the Bach nosodes, which are still available through homeopathic practitioners now. And then he found that the people he was helping would get to a certain point and they wouldn't get any better. They just didn't seem to get that last part where they would be healed. So he developed his flower essence line. I think there's 32 of them, and found that those particular flower essences would have different aspects that the person might be melancholic or really angry or different sorts of things. You can read up his. He was meticulous about keeping records on how he used those things in case studies, etc. And he found that when people started using flower essences, in addition to the other things that they're doing, they would actually get better. They would actually shift, because all of our illnesses and our issues will have an emotional component. They just will, because we're emotional beings. We all have our own thoughts and feelings and spiritual practices and our mental states and our emotional way of looking in our lives. And so all those different aspects will definitely impact how you're feeling that particular day.
I personally believe in homeopathic medicine. I know of when I was going to boarding school, we all went to a mall, and there was a guy there that was allergic to MSG. Well, unbeknownst to him, he consumed something with MSG. He started to go into anaphylactic shock, you know, the throat closing up thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that was with us was into homeopathy and gave him, I don't know what it was, but he didn't have to go to the hospital. It stopped whatever was going on.
Yep. I had a little dog that decided to go find some sort of random stuff, and she was a puppy. And the first time we drove like crazy people down 60 miles with the truck to a veterinary where we got a $180 shot. And the second time, I had been playing with homeopathics. The second time I took some homeopathic Leadum and Apis, which is homeopathic bee and homeopathic spider, and gave it to her. And the swelling went down really fast. And so that was $180 I didn't have to spend. And, you know, animals don't really fake it for you. That is a great thing. Homeopathics are awesome.
And I know,
when you use it on your pets, is it something that is topical or they ingest or how is that or both?
Well, with her at the time, I just took the little BBs, tucked them into the cap and tucked them under her tongue, just put them in her mouth. And usually animals, because it's a sugar pill, they're usually pretty flexible about eating that.
Is there anything, are there just like anything with humans, there are certain herbs that you can't get, you can't take because there may be some toxicity?
No.
Nope,
that's the beauty of homeopathics, because it's so highly diluted, the actual plant material doesn't really exist anymore. And so that's where a lot of people who are like, oh, it's bogus, there's nothing there. but because it's a frequency medicine, what happens is you can have people who, let's say pregnant women, they can take homeopathics. People on multiple medications can take homeopathics, and it won't conflict with anything else that they're doing. And so you can definitely give them to your animals. So, for example, homeopathic St. John's wort is called Hypericum perforatum, and it is specifically really helpful for nerve pain. So if you just slammed your thumb in the door or you have a really bad toothache, you can take Hypericum perforatum in a homeopathic form, whereas if you are a person who's on medication, St. John's wort is contraindicated for a lot of different medications, and so that would be something you wouldn't be able to take. But the homeopathic version of it, no problem. It will not conflict with the other things that you're doing. It won't create a reaction. It won't, it won't interact with the other pharmaceuticals that you might be on.
Well, wow, I know there's going to be people out there that are saying, oh, well, it's all a psychosomatic result. It's, the placebo effect. Is there any studies out there that show that it's not the placebo effect? Because we know that's a powerful thing.
Most of the people most of the studies are going to be in Europe. There's not really any companies here that want to spend millions of dollars going through FDA approval, although all the homeopathics are FDA approved. But here's the thing. My puppy is not going to magically shrink her head from swelling from a bug bite because I want her to. She reacted to the homeopathics. So there's two categories of the placebo effect program that has never been really adequately explained. How do you explain when a baby stops having a reaction, and how do you explain when an animal has a reaction? They don't fake it for you.
No, they don't.
If you've got a little tiny kid and previously had teething pain and now they don't, it's not like they're just going to suck it up because mommy feels bad about their pain. They just really aren't going to do that. So those are the kind of categories. And there was a recent study, a compendium of studies that were in Smithsonian Magazine that were like, this is proven. There's all these studies in Australia that say this doesn't work. But if you look at the actual studies that they had, it was like, first of all, homeopathics work differently than Western medicine. A Western medicine practitioner, in my opinion, views the body as a car, okay? So the carburetor's broken, just yank that baby out, or, it needs an oil change or whatever. So in the same way, a Western medical practitioner, if you've got high blood pressure, just take this pill and it'll suppress the symptoms. If you have a gallbladder problem, we'll just yank that baby out. A homeopathic practitioner or a practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine or an Ayurvedic practitioner looks at the person as a whole being and really spends time looking at, how's your sleep? What kind of activities you're doing? What's your diet look like? What are your reactions with these different types of things? And does a custom program specifically for you? Because if you're familiar with Chinese medicine, for example, somebody who may have a particular issue of, let's say, lung congestion, because you're looking at a five-wheel category of like looking at your metal, wood, earth, fire, and water and how those different things balance, one person with one imbalance and one person with a different imbalance will use different herbs because it all started from a different place. And the same way with homeopathics. If you have a person who has, let's say, acid reflux, it could be something that is easy as like some issues with carbohydrates being too bulky and not digesting particularly well, or it can be somebody who's really particularly acidic or somebody who has some anger-related issues, and that kind of makes their stomach upset. So there's not going to be, in this study, they were really looking for some sort of one-size-fits-all, and the categories of things that they're looking for were like, dysentery. This homeopathic thing didn't fix this one thing, and it's like, well, it's never set up to do that. That's not the way it's set up to do. It's a completely different premise. So you're looking at a different modality of things, and there's combination remedies that you can get from different companies that will have, like, stomach distress, for example, and have, like, four or five different things in there that will help bring things back into balance. But for the most part, if you're looking at a constitutional situation where you've had long-term issues with a particular thing, going to a homeopathic practitioner is like a multi-hour experience of really looking at, like, what's going on with you. Let's identify the process of getting down to what the base level imbalance is going to be.
Yeah, it's like very similar to Chinese medicine. Very similar. Yeah,
exactly.
And not every prescription is the same. It could be tweaked just a little bit, and it just depends on so many different factors.
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. So same with homeopathics, or like you said, the Chinese or Ayurvedic practitioners or what have you, all looking at like, what's the source of the imbalance and how do we address and get everything back into balance, rather than just like, oh, let's suppress the symptoms of the problem, which is what Western medicine does. It doesn't actually fix anything. It just suppresses the symptoms.
So we talked about just a little bit on the tip of the iceberg about toxic environments. And we're not only talking about people, but we also talk about environments, you know, places that have a residual and negative energies or positive energy or neutral energies. And what can you share with the audience that are listening and how to neutralize, if not possibly not have the environment affect you?
Well, there's a couple things that you can do. One of them would be to look at grounding your space. And the way you ground a space, like let's say you're in your room, you're in a conference room and people are being a little crazy. So you would visualize having in each corner of the room, top and bottom, a silver cord, and then gather those in the middle of the room. And then as you're visualizing that, believe that as you pull on those cords, it kind of pulls away a membrane. And then as you pull those cords, it goes down to the center of the planet and pulls all the energy into the center of the planet and kind of shifts the energy that way. And you can actually feel the room get cooler more often than not. It just kind of, and people just kind of chill out a little bit. The other thing that you can do is you can tuck bowls of salt water on the floor. Kind of like if you have a cubicle and different people come in and just kind of like bleh all over you, you can have a little bowl of salt water on the floor that will kind of help ground that negative emotion into the floor. The other thing that you can do is there's an invocation that I really like that you can use to kind of keep your energy up high, because energy is like water. It's going to come to the same level for everybody, right? You can't, if you add a cup of water to a situation, it's not like that cup of water is going to stick up higher than the rest of it. It's going to all go into the same level. So if you go into a place that's got a low energy frequency, if you don't keep your energy up and flowing, you're going to go back down to that level with everything else, because that's the way energy works. So the invocation that I like, you say it three times, it's, I invoke the highest frequency of the universe within. I am a clear and perfect channel. Love is my guide. I invoke the highest frequency of the universe within. I am a clear and perfect channel. Love is my guide. I invoke the highest frequency of the universe within. I am a clear and perfect channel, and love is my guide. And you can modify the words in any way that works for you. I got that initial invocation slightly different from Dale Walker, who's a crystal therapist practitioner. But you, if you say that at least three times and maybe have it like a little mantra in your head, your energy will be up and will stay that way. Even if you go to a place where it's a little contentious and wobbly, because you've created yourself as a conduit of energy that's flowing and up, you'll keep your energy up no matter where you go.
I don't know
Are there
about
places?
You, Nicole or Jason, but I find laughter for myself.
Yes.
You know, I like to laugh, and it's just a way to just shift that energy. Even thinking something funny, even if you have to laugh about yourself, maybe laugh at others, not at others, it's going to be an attacking way, but just jokingly, we can, you know, just have fun and not take life so seriously. Because I think I can feel an energy shift even when I'm doing Chinese medicine, that, you know, when a thought can just, I could feel even inside the body the shift, you know, inside and outside the body. So I think that if we can smile and find things to laugh about, I think that's really a big thing in how we approach our attitude about life.
Oh, most definitely. This is mostly if you're going into a space and it's, you don't have the control over it. You can definitely shift the energy by coming from things with a light heart and encouraging people to kind of like join you in laughter, and that definitely helps. But sometimes it's just nice to make sure that you're taking care of yourself first, that you can actually do that.
Are there places that are like naturally toxic? I know I've been out, you know, like in the woods before and walked in places that just felt really uncomfortable, and I've never really known why. Just, it's a really strange sensation. Are there places naturally toxic, or could it be that something bad happened there? Or I just never figured that one out.
It's probably going to be something where something bad happened more often than not. It's going, and I call those things the vortexes. When I do energy clearing on a space, there'll be a couple things I'll look for. One of them is going to be a portal. that is an interdimensional doorway where different kind of things can come through. That might be a toxic stream that's going to be an energy stream, but it can also be a physical stream of yucky stuff. And then a vortex. And a vortex is going to be a repeating energy event where the beings who are involved in that event, it's usually something pretty yucky, and I don't really spend time looking at specifically what happened to them, that it's going to be something pretty violent and pretty uncomfortable, and the beings are trapped. So when you are in that situation where you come to a place, that's probably what's happening. And you can always ask for, you know, angelic assistance to help those beings move forward or kind of pray for their highest and best good. Those would be options to look at.
Yeah, it's usually just like a nondescript. One was a park. A park had a wooded area. And then another one was I was camping, and the woods around me were fine, but then I walked a quarter mile down a dirt road, and the woods on the left suddenly just have this ominous foreboding sensation. It just didn't make sense to me why it was just that area.
It could be many things, Jason. It could be, you know, it could be residual, like Nicole was saying, or it could be something that had happened and there's hauntings, or, you know, we never know. It could be a djinn. Who knows? You know what I mean? But you're feeling it, and you were right, just to get away from that area. It's starting to make you feel uncomfortable.
Well, I did a clearing of a place a few years ago that was in an area of the south where there had been a massive slaughter of the natives who had been living there. And the place had been so traumatized that if you look energetically at a place, there's like a grid work, and then everything kind of clicks in. I hear it kind of like as a Lego that clicks into the thing. And everything in that space was not attached. The creeks were kind of not in attachment to the world. The trees weren't really attached. Everything had been so traumatized that it wasn't really bonded to the earth right. So sometimes when you get to those places, it can be a significantly horrible past event that you're picking up the traces of.
It doesn't happen very often. I just noticed a couple times in the past many years that I've noticed that sensation. I just always wondered about that.
Sure.
What about you,
Sherry?
Yeah,
there's many ways a person can ground themselves. You know, I just think that I feel that there's many ways just to get to the top of the mountain. Some people need, you know, sage, or some people need meditation, or some people need to just have some quiet time or breathe and do Qigong or, you know, Tai Chi or yoga or whatever. But just to ground yourself is very, very important. You want that balance. You don't want to always be in your head. It's very important to have balance.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even just drink some water. That's always going to help as well. Sometimes you just, you know, if you're not properly hydrated, it can really impact you a lot more.
I always go for a walk after Paranormal Horizons. That might be my subconscious way of grounding myself.
I think you're right.
Sometimes we have spooky subjects, you know, if we're talking about demons and stuff like that, and like, okay, I need to go for a walk. But it's a habit now. Almost every time after the show, I go for a brisk 20-minute walk. It's like refreshing.
Oh,
it's nice out.
Yeah.
You get fresh air. Yeah.
Very smart.
I like walking at night. Like walking at night. Although sometimes I get creeped out, but for the most part, I don't.
Oh, I like walking at night as well. If it's not sideways rain.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any light. It's just it's the forest around me. So you have Mother Nature at its finest, between the coyotes to the mountain lions to the bears and everything else that you can imagine.
So opportunities to meet lots of creatures. How fun.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I'm not scared of them. I ironically, I'd be surprised, you know, how sometimes the city folk, you know, they'll come up and they're, I'm scared. I don't want to drive home by myself on your road, in your gravel road. It's only one way in and one way to get out. And, you know, I honestly feel that because it's the cars and people you got to worry about. It's not the animals, the cars and people.
No.
They don't pay attention. They're not present, like you were talking about. They're all outside themselves. They're not present and being present in what's going on. There's always one step away from, you know, detachment or living outside their skin.
Right, they got their monkey mind going on, thinking about like, oh my, blah, 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 what happened on last Tuesday, and what's going to happen tomorrow at work, and what about that conversation I had the other day, and boy, do I feel grumpy about that, and just like not actually present.
I know. It's been like our way of living. It's, you know, having the computer and just, checking emails, answering phone calls. It's just endless. And this was nice. After I do a show, you know, I'm busy on the weekends and I'm on tour. Sundays if I'm off, or Mondays if I'm off, I just love going down to the creek. I know I have a positive vortex because I've seen them. But I just know that positively. But I just go with the natives and just commune with the ancestors. That's just, I love it because they know who I am. We've been here for, 17 years, and it's like I'm home. It's great.
Right.
I'd give a kidney to live where you live. It's so beautiful.
Oh, you would not, Jason. You'd be scared at night.
No, I think I would. Well,
no, you'd like where I live. I live right on the coast.
I love that, too.
Yeah, that's nice, too.
I can hear the waves crashing right now.
Are you, like, right on the water or just a little ways away?
I'm probably about a 5-minute walk to the ocean. So I can hear the ocean at night, and I can hear the seals. And I can hear when we've had these huge record tides of, like, 20-foot tides with huge waves, and when you have those, you can definitely hear the crashing of the waves and the sea lions and the seagulls and the owls and all that kind of good stuff. It's really fabulous. And sometimes
you
get this amazing storms.
Zone?
Yes, I'm actually, the sign is about 6 feet down the hill from me.
Wow.
Mm.
Jeez.
Yeah, just missed it. It's the official tsunami assemble point.
When a person, a soul, has missing pieces, what do you suggest they can do without, if they can't hire a professional or somebody to do something for them, what can they do for themselves if they're, we call, soul lost, missing pieces of themselves or their souls? What do you suggest they can do to help themselves?
Well, there's going to be two different categories of that for me. One of them is going to be missing pieces on your body, because a lot of times when I work with people, they might be missing their arms, or they might not be completely present from, like, mid-chest down. So in those types of instances, you're going to want to really focus on being grounded and being in your body. I can't tell you the number of people who have never really been in their body before. So an example of that would be, okay, you're getting back in the program of being in your body. So when you get up in the morning, you're going to put your feet on the floor, and you're actually going to feel what's under your feet. You're going to feel the texture under the sole of your foot. You're going to feel the air movement on your skin. You're going to, to taste your food. You're going to feel the different aspects, so you can start to re-inhabit your body and kind of reintegrate that. If you've got soul loss types of situations, you can call those things back, especially if you have something of, like, this traumatic event happened to me, and I'm pretty sure that something else happened with that. So a lot of people will be running around with, like, 90% of their energy gone. You can call back your energy from wherever you've left it cleansed and clear. Just call it back. And you can look at it as, like, change that word from I call back my energy cleansed and clear to I call back my power, I call back my joy, I call back my clarity, I call back my enthusiasm, or whatever it is, cleansed and clear from wherever I left it. And you're going to find that there's going to be specific events or people in your life where that might be more of a trigger that pops in your head of, like, oh, what about that one time? Then work on that one. You're going to have to probably go through that a little bit more than once, because it's not going to be instantaneous, because goodness knows having an instantaneous shift could be really hard to acclimate to. But you can definitely call your energy back cleansed and clear and release what's not yours back to wherever it is you left it. So that's probably the easiest way that I know of.
Wow, that's wonderful. So that's more work we can do for ourselves to help.
Yes. Yes, you definitely can. It's very easy. You can also, another thing that people end up doing is they'll have their field out too far. And what that means is that if you aren't taking care of your auric field, and if you're in your house, if you extend your arm, it should hit around your fingertips. And if you're in a crowd, if you fold your arm in, it should hit at your elbow. Well, a lot of people, their auric field will be out, like, in the next zip code. It'll be just really big. And what that means is that everybody who's in your field, you're processing all their stuff. Rush hour traffic, in the office, in the shopping center, whatever. Everybody who's in your field, you're processing their things. So call your field back in. you know, like you're visualized that you're like in a parachute with filaments, and you just pull that in with an inhale and intend that when you're at home, it's in your fingertips. If it's on your, if you're out and about, it's at your elbow, and have it in a little closer to you so you're only processing your stuff, not everybody else's.
I like that. Calling back a lot of the traumas that you can release, help release yourself and forgive yourself, like, and you can also help forgive others.
Exactly, exactly. You can also, I also have a bunch of sprays that work with that as well, that you can spray into your field and kind of help yourself get some clarity on those. So you can definitely work with flower essences. There's a variety of different kinds of flower essences out there from a variety of different practitioners and suppliers that have flower essences that work with different particular things. So,
you know, in essence, when you use flower essences, it's not a quick fix. This is just something to kind of boost you into healing, self-healing, correct?
You know, it's really going to depend on how entrenched you are in your stuff. So the first one of the first flower essences I made was for my nephew, who is really, really small. And he would get enraged and have this purple, I call it the purple kabuki rage face. And he really hadn't had a life where you could justify why he was purple. So I created these things called Sans Meltdown Drops, and I could put a drip on his head, and he would immediately shift. But he didn't have a whole lot of baggage. You know, you and me and Jason, we've been around the block a couple times, so we have a little bit more trenched points of view about something, and so it might take us a little bit more time. But it really depends on how attached you are to shift, you know?
Wow, isn't that great? What do you think, Jason?
The one thing that stuck out to me was when you're talking about being in the moment, when you get out of bed in the morning, you know, feeling the different sensations.
Mm-hmm.
All I feel when I get out of bed in the morning is pain. I'm not even kidding.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that might be
hurts.
A part where you look at, you might look at, like, how can you, as you're laying there before you get up, maybe take some deep breaths and, like, breathe down to the soles of your feet, breathe to the palms of your hands, really see beautiful healing energy going to all the different parts that might have some challenges, kind of visualize that just being blown away by your energy, and see if that makes some shift for you.
Yeah, I definitely need to, you know, do something like that, because it's just everything's my body's falling apart. It feels like, I don't know, I'm getting old.
I would be aware when you say that. One of the things that pops into my head is be aware of how your words are invoking what you're creating in your life.
That is true. I do believe that, because I believe thoughts are things. So if I think that I'm getting old, I'm going to start. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. It's hard to break out of these old negative habits, you know. I'll be honest, tend to have a lot of negative thoughts, and my I can't shut my mind up. It's always thinking about stuff, and what's interesting is that I always assume the worst thing's going to happen. I don't know why I'm programmed that way, but if there's an event, I assume the worst thing's going to happen no matter what the odds are, even if it's one in a million that the bad thing's going to happen. That's what's stuck in my brain. And I imagine I'm probably not the only one out there that's like that. I know a few other people are like that. You know, we're just kind of, we always assume the worst is going to happen. And the key, and what I would like to learn, is how do you break that, the habit of those negative thought processes?
Well, the first thing you do is be aware of them. That's the first step. And the next thing you say is like, oh, wait a minute, I don't want that. I don't want this. I want it to be this. I'm going to visualize that instead of the nuclear holocaust, I'm going to visualize having a really great dinner and meeting really cool people. And I'm going to focus on anything else that's not in alignment with that. I cancel and clear that. So let's focus on what I do want, because the universe is set up so that you always get to be right. So, and your words are an invocation to the universe. So be careful what you're wishing for.
Yeah, I believe that we manifest stuff.
Yeah, so just like be aware that when you find yourself tromping down that well, you know, rutted road of like, wah, wah, this sucks, then that's where you go, wait a minute, I know how this works out. We're not going to go here today. We're not going to go, and it's harder to go from like, and I think it's pretty much impossible to go from like everything sucks to everything's fabulous. So try to go to like a neutral place of like, you know what, I'm open to miraculous things happening for me today. I'm open to meeting some really interesting people, and I'm open to having it be a pleasant day or something better. And I think that's attainable for people. It's like when you go to the, you know, it's going to be amazing, and then you get disappointed. It's like, yeah, I knew this wasn't going to work. So shoot for neutral.
Yeah.
Shoot for, you know, it's going to be okay. Yeah.
And neutral is a huge improvement. Going from, you know, a negative nanny to
exactly.
neutral would be great.
Exactly. And it's easily attainable.
I'm just looking at the clock here, and we're just about out of time. So if people want to learn more or contact you, or do you have a website where people could learn more information?
I do have a website, and my website's called energyismagic.com. And they have all my sprays on there and information about clearing services and all that good stuff. Energyismagic.com. So, or call me, you know. I'm happy to answer questions. All my information is on the website.
Very cool.
Oh my God!
Thank you so much.
So much information. It's amazing just to hear all these little things and suggestions that you have. It's wonderful. Thank you so much, Nicole. We appreciate
you. Thank you. Thank you so much for a wonderful evening. It's been really fun. Thank you.
Right, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for coming on.
It's all about sharing, you know, and improving
yourself.
Yeah, it is. What it's all about, and helping each other.
And being conscious and just paying attention, because that's the first step to everything, is seeing what the patterns are and choosing that you can make some changes from there, because you are the powerful creator of the universe. You're the one who defines what's happening in your universe, as we all do. So pick good stuff.
Good stuff.
I totally agree with that.
Awesome.
Oh,
so I'm not sure how this works. Do I just hang up?
Sure, or you can just sit and listen the last couple of minutes, and I'll mute you, or you can just hang up. All right, Sherry, very good.
She's fine. That's wonderful. Well, next week, we're going to have Douglas Robinson. He's our first-time guest. He's been very well-known in the media and TV and just very well internationally sought-after person. First time we're going to talk about is vampires, literally vampires. This guy has written a couple books, I don't know right offhand, but there are vampires in this world. So he's going to explain who they are, how you know they are, that we've confronted with them, you know, being with them, and how to deal with them and how to protect ourselves. So that's what's going to be for next week. Douglas Robinson, and we're going to talk about vampires.
Like real vampires? Like the movie Lost Boys vampires?
They're all real vampires, and I don't want to say, but, you know,
cool.
Anything goes. You just never know.
That's true. I'll be the first to admit that I don't know everything. So who knows? Maybe there are vampires.
This is going to be very interesting. We're going to learn a lot. So, yes, he has been confronted with vampires, and he wrote a couple books about it. So it's just something that we're going to learn from. So it's going to be a very interesting show.
Awesome. Well, unless you have anything else, I guess we'll see everybody next Sunday at the usual 8 p.m. West Coast time. Do you have anything else, Sherry?
Just want to go and give a quick shout out to thank you so much, Bear and Maria, for having me on their show, Into the Fire. Another paranormal show. They're awesome. And they're really helpful with abductees and experiencers. So this coming Tuesday, I want to give them a shout out to Eric Mitchell. Eric Mitchell will be on this coming Tuesday, I believe. I could be wrong, but I hope I'm right. And, just go ahead and tune in this coming Tuesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time. I believe it's 8 o'clock Central time. So, yeah, check them out. They're a good team of people, very seasoned, and I can't thank them highly enough and respect them highly enough. So,
very cool. Well, with that, we hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see everybody next Sunday at PM West Coast time. And hopefully, if anybody out there hasn't given us a like on Facebook, we would certainly appreciate that, and I hope everybody has a safe week. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Hey, take care. Peace.